The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Robert Kravitz, a police chaplain for the Arizona Department of Public Safety and other police departments. We'll also have a visit from our Mevinah on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman, storyteller Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Summer vacation has arrived here in southern Arizona where I live, and it will soon reach everywhere else in this fair land. It's a time for journeying out to see family and friends, and perhaps even more importantly, to encounter new places and new experiences of every kind. For some of us, it'll be heading off to the beach or the mountains. For others, a more ambitious trip to other countries and continents. Travel is one experience that can expand your mind, and of course your waistline, and broaden your horizons. I have often discoursed here on Two Jewish on the traveling tendencies of our people from earliest times. Abraham started it all nearly four millennia ago, journeying out as the first wandering Jew, but in nearly every generation we have had outstanding travelers. They range from patriarchs like Jacob and Joseph to Moses and the whole people of Israel, and they continue onward to all the many Jewish travelers of antiquity in the Middle Ages who spread our faith and peoplehood to the four corners of the earth. In each generation, we have a tendency to head out for the road, sometimes seeking freedom or opportunity, sometimes fleeing oppressors, and sometimes just going out to see what might be round the next corner. And right now, with no better motivation than needing a little break, it feels like vacation time.
Vacation, all I ever wanted. Vacation, had to get away. Vacation, meant to be spent alone.
One of the truly liberating aspects of vacation is that it serves as a kind of extended Shabbat, a cessation of our normal lives. I sometimes think that if we really took a full day off to rest up every week, we wouldn't really need vacations. If we could manage to spend 24 hours a week doing nothing, having a real Yom Menucha, a day of rest, wouldn't that kind of add up to the same thing as a two-week vacation once a year? Actually, wouldn't it add up to more like a 7 or 8 week vacation every year? It's just that it's so hard to break the work habit on a weekly basis, it becomes essential to have one of these more complicated vacation experiences at least once a year. And so we hit the road, searching for rest and relaxation, or perhaps intellectual and spiritual stimulation of a different kind. What will we find out there on the holiday road? As the Buddhist saying has it, wherever you go, there you are. But the truth is that for some of us, the version of ourselves that we find on vacation is a lot more pleasant than the regular one. And so, for those of you journeying onward to new and exciting places, may you be blessed with a Nesiyah Tovah, a good and safe journey, and may you return refreshed, reinvigorated, and re-inspired. As the blessing in the Torah puts it, Tzeidchem l'shalom uvoachem l'shalom. Go forth in peace and return in peace from this time your vacations. Play us in a little more officially on this June morning. Here's a lovely, if schmaltzy, Israeli song, Zemer Nugeh, about voices calling out to each other from a great distance. Will you hear my voice when you are far away? Will you hear my voice where you are going? Only if you podcast Too Jewish. The country is beautiful and its ways are wide. Hatishma Koli.
Hatishma Koli. Save bracha.
Hatishma Koli, sung by cantors Jack and Frida Mendelssohn. By the way, Jack's an old friend of mine from cantorial days. Well, while I was going on about vacations, I know one place very few people are going on vacation this summer. It's the Gulf Coast, and perhaps the whole Caribbean will ultimately be affected. The enormous British petroleum oil spill is soiling much of the coast of Louisiana and parts east, west, and south of there, too, creating an environmental disaster of epic proportions. To tell you the honest truth, I am more than a little amazed that 35 years after the Arab oil embargo brought home the truth about the danger of our dependence on oil, and 41 years since the terrible Santa Barbara oil spill of 1969 inspired the creation of Earth Day, we are still poking holes in the ground and sucking out petroleum so we can burn it. This particular ecological disaster in the Gulf was no doubt in part the result of massive corruption at the Minerals Management Service of the federal government, whose employees, the supposed regulators, allowed oil company executives to actually write their reports for them in pencil, and then they themselves traced them over in pen. I am not making this up. Well, following an era of governance by former oil business executives, it is no surprise that our ability to keep track of this highly dangerous and potentially disastrous work has nearly disappeared. What a shanda! In Jewish terms, one of our primary purposes on this earth is to serve as caretakers for it. At all costs, bal tashchit, avoid destroying nature, protect it. We hope and pray that they speedily get this disastrous mess under control, save the animals they can, and limit the obvious environmental catastrophe. But on another level, I find it astonishing to think that when I saw my first computer in 1969, when I was 8 years old, it took up an entire building, and its greatest skill seemed to be producing calendars with Snoopy's image on them in O's. Today, the small device I record my schedule on probably has far more computing power than all of NASA had when it landed a man on the moon. And computers have given us an astonishing array of capabilities we never had before. Yet in that same exact period of time, the main change in automobiles seems to be that they are mostly made of plastic now instead of steel. They still run on gasoline. And that stubborn fact has not been changed by any great technological leaps into new horizons of development. You know, maybe everybody involved with these oil-based industries needs to take one of those intellect-clearing vacations and come back with a different perspective on how to fix this mess. Because I'm pretty sure the way out is not by drilling for more oil. When we come back on Too Jewish this fine morning, our guest will be Rabbi Bob Kravitz, who became a police chaplain by accident. Find out how when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. Chardonnay Shabbat is here. Friday night services were never this fun before. It's a loaf of good bread, a jug of excellent wine, and you, and a delightful way to begin your weekend with Sabbath fun and friendship at Temple Emmanuel during our summer Chardonnay Shabbat evenings. Join us for Chardonnay Shabbat at Temple Emmanuel every Friday night this summer. We start with a wine, cheese, and fruit pre-owned egg Shabbat reception at 5 p.m., followed by a fun, musical one-hour Sabbath service at 5:45. Celebrate summer with Chardonnay Shabbat. There's no charge or obligation, just a lovely way to begin the weekend at Temple Emmanuel. Temple Emmanuel is centrally located at 225 North Country Club Road between Broadway and 5th. Call 520-327-4501 for more information. That's 327-4501. Or visit our website at templeemmanueltucson.org and join us on Friday nights for Chardonnay Shabbat.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish Rabbi Robert Kravitz. Bob Kravitz is a Connecticut native who currently is employed as an area hospital chaplain all around the Phoenix area for Jewish Family and Children's Service, visiting 15 hospitals weekly. Of perhaps greatest interest to us, he also serves as a volunteer police chaplain with a variety of departments and serves as a first responder chaplain at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. Rabbi Kravitz was ordained at that great institution of Jewish study, Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in Cincinnati, my alma mater, and has received the prestigious Doctor of Divinity degree back in 1999. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. So tell us a little bit about what a police chaplain does and what a Jewish police chaplain does.
Well, it's very different being a police chaplain from being a hospital chaplain or from being a chaplain to any other facility. Our responsibility depends on the department. Some departments want us to specifically deal with members of the department, that is the sworn members, the civilian members, and the volunteers and their extended families. Other departments use us where we can be helpful at a crime scene or a major disaster scene where it's another pair of hands to assist officers, first responders, and to deal with victims, witnesses, a variety of folks who might be there who might need counseling or quieting down sometimes.
How do you end up becoming a volunteer police chaplain? There's actually quite a lot of training involved, as I understand it.
There certainly are requirements. In the case of the Arizona Department of Public Safety, we have to have ministerial experience. We have to be ordained or licensed. We have to recognize that people of religion and of no religion are to be treated equally. There is no proselytization by anyone within that department and any other good department. And we have requirements having to do with not just theological training, but interpersonal dynamics, counseling, therapies, and the rest.
What is the most interesting part about the police chaplaincy work?
For me, the most interesting and maybe most significant part is to be able to represent the Jewish community to a group of folks who in many cases have had little if no spiritual connection with the members of the Jewish community. Many of them are very well churched and understand their particular traditions, but don't understand where it fits into the history of the universe and how Judaism likewise is there. It gives me the opportunity to explain holidays and customs and ceremonies. It gives me the opportunity when asked to provide officers with background material in their own traditions, many of which I've studied at length.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Robert Kravitz, who is a police chaplain as well as a general hospital chaplain in the Phoenix area, when we come back in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
Choosing the proper care for your mother, father, or other loved one isn't easy. David Shackman and his wife, Ann, are New Yorkers who recently found a home at Handmaker, Tucson's premier provider of assisted living and senior care.
I'm 88 years old. My wife is 86. And we like staying in Handmaker because people here are very courteous and the atmosphere is nice.
Well, I like the program here because they have entertainers, have a bingo. They made a luau with Hawaiian dances.
Handmaker gives their son, Ken, peace of mind.
I know that they are going to get good service and the staff will treat them as friends.
Handmaker, centrally located on Rosemont just south of Grant, includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, and Tucson's most caring staff. Call 881-2323.
The food here is excellent. It's as good as any good restaurant in New York City.
For a consultation and tour, call 881-2323 or go to handmaker.org.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism of Kvetch or Akfel, please email us at 2JewishRadio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. If you don't do those things, you won't be calling, you won't be writing, you won't be telling us what you think. Never mind, I'll sit in the dark. Anyway, you can get CDs of past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com, or downloading us from the website or at the Apple iTunes Store as podcasts. Well, in this season of light and rising heat, here's a lovely, cool song from Ahinoam Nini, the wonderful Israeli-American singer known as Noah. It's called Now.
Now there is light coming in through the crack in the door. Now there is hope where I'd never expect it before. Now there are so many things, but there's nothing at all. Now you are learning to stand, I am learning to fall. Now as the air in the night becomes cooler and sweet, now I get up seven times just to cover his feet. Now there is pain, but I've packed it away for next year. Now there is newness and grace, and for now there's no fear. Then I can hardly remember what then used to be. Then there was someone I knew looked exactly like me. I was running and running with so much to boast. I had no idea of what matters the most. I was running and running with so much to boast. I had no idea of what matters the most. Now, as the air in the night becomes cooler and sweet, I get up seven times just to cover his feet. Now there is pain, but I've packed it away for next year. Now there is newness and grace, and for now there is no fear. Later, when all of this is turned to songs and faded pits,
That was Noah singing her lovely song, Now. You know, yesterday's Torah portion happened to be Shlach Lecha, the story of the spies, which was my son Boaz's bar mitzvah portion just last year. I can't actually believe it's been a full year since he turned 13. And yet, he just graduated from middle school and the circle game is spinning faster and faster, isn't it? Well, enough maudlin parental musings. What I really meant to say was Mazel Tov to my kid on the anniversary of his bar mitzvah. It's cool to remember annually the events that make us adults in Jewish tradition and the happy accomplishments we were privileged to share with family and friends. We welcome our Mavinta, our expert on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Lederman. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, Jewish law is often sort of divorced from ethics today in a lot of Jews' minds, if they even think about halacha, if they even think about Jewish law. But when you come to the question of kashrut, they really, most modern liberal Jews don't think about that as moral. They think about it as ritual. But it is ethical, isn't it?
Well, it's so interesting. You know, I sometimes think that we get so hung up with these distinctions, and certainly Judaism does, I think, a very good job, at least traditionally, of trying to break down those distinctions and say that really pretty much everything ends up traditionally being a question of moral decision-making, whether it's refraining from or committing to. But let's answer your question. How can, you know, the decision to not eat a cheeseburger or have shrimp scampi be a moral choice? It seems like it's a culinary choice or a gastronomical choice. Well, first of all, the Jewish concern extends really beyond what we eat, to how the food we eat is slaughtered, how it's prepared, how it's served. The notion, for example, that for an animal to be kosher, and kosher really means fit for consumption, it has to be killed in a prescribed way. And the law of shechita, which is for ritual slaughter, is intended and meant to provide the swiftest and most painless and humane death for an animal. Now, that's not to say that there have been grave injustices, and we've witnessed, you know, in the last couple of years, some real problems with the way that law has been really defiled, I think. But the intention, the initial intention, is to slaughter animals in the most painless and humane way possible. And that's just the beginning of the thought. The next is that we observe the laws of kashrut not because necessarily they're better for our health, although some people have tried to establish that's the reason, you know, or because somehow we're supposed to, you know, try to avoid anything that will contaminate us, like shellfish or pork that can, you know, easily spoil. But really, the reason that we observe the laws of kashrut is because God said so. I mean, the Torah makes no attempt to provide a rationale. It's really one of those "I'm the mom, that's why" kind of rules. Mm-hmm. And I think that alone, training yourself to learn to do something simply because God said so, without questioning it, without having to have a Platonic or Aristotelian logic behind it or rationale, is very important. It's an important part of just being part of a faith based on the notion that there is an authority that you don't necessarily always challenge. Sometimes you just follow the law. So that's one thing. But that's not to say that the law hasn't been evolved over time. And I'd love to talk about how it's been evolved. Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shlomi, who founded the Jewish Renewal Movement, began the concept of eco-kashrut.
Right.
I'd love to talk about eco-kashrut next week and to take a look at what we've been doing with the laws of kashrut.
I would love to. Thanks, Amy. We'll talk next week.
You bet.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Weidler of Janos Restaurant and the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So what's going on this summer at Janos and the J-Bar?
We've got so much going on, it's hard for me to keep it all straight, but I'm going to try. We've got our summer music series that you know about. We have our summer passports where you dine, and the more times you dine, you collect stamps for free dinners at Janos or J-Bar. Our Janos summer samplers at $19.95, our J-Bar summer samplers at $12.95. at Janos, our 10 terrific taste menu, four courses, 12 different items for $50, drink specials, wine specials. Summer's our time.
I'm starving.
Well, come on over, Rabbi.
What's the phone number for Janos and the J-Bar?
615-6100.
And the website?
www.janos.com. We've got all our menus up. We've got the summer music schedule up.
And don't forget all the great samplers. We will see you at Janos and the J-Bar, J-A-N-O-S.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been enjoying ourselves in Italy the last couple of weeks. We'll continue. We were in the north, and now let's move south, talking about places you might go on your summer vacation and find remarkable Jewish communities. Rome, most important city in Italy, one of the most important cities in the world, and certainly an important Jewish community.
Yeah, and just thinking about the food there makes my mouth water. there are a number of specialties that are considered Jewish cuisine in Rome, even by non-Jewish Romans. And some of them are actually kosher de facto, like carciofi alla Giudea, so-called Jewish artichokes.
Right, the fried artichokes.
And you can get them throughout Rome in restaurants which may have no idea what kosher food is, but which refer to them as Jewish artichokes. And there are a few other dishes as well.
And they are spectacular, I have to say.
Yeah, but it was a food of poor people because historically, Jews in Rome were not wealthy merchants. They were poor people confined to a ghetto and really oppressed under the foot of the church with rare exceptions. And they lived right across the river from the church in a ghetto, and they were never allowed.
The Vatican is constantly in your sight if you're, you know, standing around the area of the ghetto.
Most Jews in Rome today, and there is a thriving community there, live nowhere near the old ghetto. A few live there, and a few have businesses there. But what's interesting is that as soon as the Italian state was born, and the ghetto walls came down for the final time, the prohibition against building a synagogue that was noticeable and high and splendid was abolished by the state. And the Jews of Rome built this huge, beautiful synagogue, which is a whole city block.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Which is absolutely splendid. It's now, sadly, surrounded by police and fences and stuff for security reasons. But part of it, a wing of it, in fact, is devoted to a Jewish historical museum, which is well worth visiting. So you can walk the ghetto streets, you can visit this historic museum, you can see the synagogue, and there are not one or two, but like five or six kosher restaurants in a small area of a few square blocks that used to be the ghetto, as well as a few Jewish shops. Definitely worth seeing. And the Roman community per se dates way, way back, you know, over 2,000 years, as you said before, to a time that predates our distinctions between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. I mean, there were no Jews in Spain, and there were no Jews in the lands that we refer to as Ashkenaz.
Well, Germany and, you know, obviously Poland, Russia, places like that. You know, it's fascinating. When I was touring the Vatican, we went around the back and saw some of the old tombstones. I mean, the Vatican Museum is unbelievable. They have just far too much to see. But right. When you go there, you always go. When you go to Italy, you have to go see this museum. It's phenomenal. And then in the archaeological remains, there were some tombstones. There were Jewish tombstones from the first century and maybe the first pre-Christian century. And they had Jewish symbols. So not, as you would expect today, a menorah, but the lulav and etrog were very common more than 2,000-year-old symbols and other Jewish symbols, and you could read this sort of Paleo-Hebrew, the old Hebrew on it, and it's there they are in the Vatican Museum, and there's no signs pointing your way to them.
Right, right.
We will continue to tour Italy and talk some more about Jewish things you could do on your summer vacation. Thanks, Tom.
And look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service.
Mm-hmm.
Shlomo is standing in his house in front of an open window. Unfortunately, he is naked, wearing nothing but a necktie. Jacob walks past the house, sees Shlomo, and asks, "Why are you standing there nude?" "Why can't I be nude?" replies Shlomo. "It's my house. There's nobody else here." "Okay, but why are you wearing a tie?" asks Jacob. "Well," replies Shlomo, "what if somebody drops by to visit?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish Just For You. You should live and be well, just in case you decide to tie one on. Sorry. We now welcome our Two Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. Here's another clever rabbi story collected by Steve Shankin. There was once a boy who was running around town, and he happened to find, like in the last story, a little purse of 100 gold coins. And he took it back to his father, and while his father kind of wanted to keep it, he knew that the right thing to do to set an example for his son and just to be good was to return that gold to whoever the owner was. And as he was looking through the paper, he happened to find that, sure enough, a merchant had put in an ad saying that he had lost his gold coins and that he would give a 50 coin reward for anyone who could return the bag to him. Well, the father figured it must be him, and so he took that pouch of gold coins to the merchant's house. And there the merchant, well, he saw this man. He thought that this man returning his pouch of gold must be rather simple to have done such a thing when he had all this money in his hands. And so the merchant decided to see if he could have a little bit more out of him, perhaps avoid paying the reward that he had so silly had agreed to in that ad in the newspaper. And so he said to the man, "Wait a second." He opened up the bag and he looked and he said, "There's only 100 gold coins in here." And the man said, but that's how much there was when I found it, when my son found it. And the merchant said, No. There were 200 gold coins in my purse. And so clearly you must have stolen half of them, hoping that I would be so grateful for you to return it that I would not even notice. But I am not so silly." And the man, he said, "Well, no, this isn't right." And they started fighting back and forth, the man now being accused of theft when he was doing such a good thing. And so finally the two decided to take it to the rabbi, and each presented their case before the rabbi. And this rabbi, also being somewhat clever, the gears ticking in his head, he thought and he thought and he thought and he said, "Okay, let me get this right. You merchant, you claim that you lost the bag of 200 gold coins, right?" The merchant said, "Uh-huh." And he turned to the man, and the rabbi said, "Man, you said that you found this bag and it only contained 100 gold coins, right?" And the man innocently said, "Oh, yes, that is right." And the rabbi said, "Well, clearly then, the bag of coins that you found is not the bag of coins that the merchant lost. So you, my man, are entitled to take all 100 gold coins because no one has claimed those ones."
Thanks, Jordan. We'll hear another story next week. And now a word of Torah. This week our portion features drama and tragedy, rebellion and punishment. The people of Israel have come to the borders of the Promised Land just 2 years after leaving Egyptian slavery. But a team of spies comes back with a poor report. "We aren't going to be strong enough to conquer the land." A lack of faith in God is at the heart of the problem. And God decides this generation will never come into the Holy Land. We'll have to live in the Sinai for 38 more years until they're all gone, and a new generation, fresh with the optimism of youth and untainted by slavery in its mentality, can emerge. Stung by the sentence of death in the desert, at the start of this week's portion, a group of rebels under the leadership of a priest, a Kohen named Korach, challenges the control of Moses and Aaron. Born into the same tribe, Korach is an insider rebelling against his own kin. "Who are these guys, Moses and Aaron, to take on the authority of ruling over us?" he asks. His rebellion threatens the very foundations of the Israelites' leadership. For if the God of liberation is not at the heart of this enterprise, if it's all a matter of ego and self-aggrandizement, they might as well go back to Egypt and live in slavery, as some of the Israelites now propose to do. But Korach dissembles. That is, he lies. For Moses clearly has had no great desire of his own for high office. He has held it as a sacred trust, given him, in fact, thrust on him by God. Korach threatens not Moses' authority, but God's. Our Torah portion tells us that in order to determine the ongoing leadership of Israel, a great outdoor contest is held, kind of religious cage match, and the net result is that Korach and his followers are completely destroyed while Moses and Aaron are fully vindicated. It's always nice when God steps in and backs you up in those fights. The abiding lesson is that a Judaism which doesn't base itself in humility and reverence for God, and that's focused on personal gain, will fail. Only through faith and devotion will we be able to reach our own promised land. When we come back to Jewish in a few moments, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and learn from Rabbi Robert Kravitz what it's like to be the rabbi on call for a whole police department. When we come back this morning on To Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world, with commentary from guest newscaster Rabbi Ben Scharf, making his farewell visit here before heading off to his new congregation in Baltimore, Maryland.
Good morning. U.S. President Barack Obama was quoted in a television interview on Thursday as saying the deadly Gaza flotilla incident this past week was, quote, tragic, but expressing hope it could somehow provide an opening to boost Middle East peace efforts. Obama, in an interview with CNN's Larry King days after an Israeli raid on a Gaza-bound Turkish aid ship, said Israel has legitimate security concerns about the Hamas-ruled Gaza Strip. But he also said Israel's blockade of Gaza is preventing people from pursuing economic opportunities. Obama described this week's flotilla incident, in which 9 activists were killed and dozens, including Israeli soldiers, were wounded, as a tragic situation, but also said it needed to be used as an opportunity to advance the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. The Obama administration has taken a relatively cautious line while Israel faces international condemnation over the deaths of 9 pro-Palestinian activists, including a 19-year-old American, aboard a ship carrying supplies to Gaza on Monday. U.S. officials have said the incident underscores the need to make progress in indirect U.S.-brokered peace talks that began last month and have failed so far to make much headway. But analysts and many people in the region believe the incident is more likely to undermine fledgling peace moves. In related news, Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has told U.S. President Obama that Israel is on the verge of losing its best friend in the Middle East due to its deadly raid on the humanitarian aid headed to Gaza Strip earlier this week. Obama called Erdogan late Tuesday to express his deep condolences for the loss of life and injuries sustained by Turkish citizens. The identities of the 9 people killed in the raid on Monday have still not been released, but it has been widely assumed that most of them were Turkish. Reports circulating on Thursday revealed that 8 of the fatalities were indeed Turkish citizens, while the 9th held an American passport. During his telephone conversation with Obama, Erdogan called Israel's raid an unacceptable violation of international law and norms. He told Obama that he demanded Israel return all Turkish citizens, including the bodies of the fatalities, and said he wanted the aid ships returned. Erdogan also called on Israel to lift the siege on the Gaza Strip. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is prepared to consider easing the naval blockade of Gaza, and involving international players in its enforcement. In doing so, he is acceding to pressure from Washington, which opposes continuing the blockade in its present format and demands that Israel make it easier to send civilian goods to Gaza. But while he is willing to have the blockade focus mainly on preventing arms smuggling to Hamas and allow international involvement in supervising Gaza-bound cargoes, Netanyahu insists on carefully scrutinizing any proposals to ensure their feasibility, rather than making a hasty decision in response to pressure stemming from the botched raid. And so far, Netanyahu has no plans to ease the land blockade. Easing the naval blockade is part of an exit strategy that Washington devised in separate talks with Israel and Turkey. It will also include an investigation into the legality of the raid. On Wednesday, as a gesture, Israel released all the flotilla's passengers without instituting criminal proceedings against them. More to follow as the situation develops. And before I sign off and head to points northeast, I just wanted to tell you what a pleasure it has been to fill in on occasion for Two Jewish with Rabbi Sam Cohen and Friends. This is Rabbi Ben Sharf saying farewell, and that is the news to Nashon.
We welcome back our guest, Rabbi Robert Kravitz. He is a police chaplain as well as maybe the hospital chaplain all around the area of the Phoenix metropolitan area, which includes really two very different and diverse jobs. He's held a variety of significant leadership roles in the Phoenix area, chaired the City of Phoenix Human Relations Commission, Kids Voting Arizona, founding board member of the FBI Citizens Academy, a board member of the Arizona Committee for Martin Luther King Jr. Civil Rights Holiday, coordinator of the Hispanic Jewish Coalition, and has master chaplain status within the International Conference of Police Chaplains. Bob, you have fulfilled a variety of roles in the Jewish world. How did you first get involved in the police chaplaincy?
It's a very funny story. I was sitting next to then police chief of the city of Phoenix at a civic event, and there was a chaplain who was introduced as a police chaplain who went up and did an invocation, and at the conclusion of which I heard a phrase that I had heard many times before that made me feel very uncomfortable. I turned to the chief and I said, "Do you have any Jewish chaplains?" And he said, "No." I said, "Do you want one?" He said, "Yes." I figured he would write me a letter, "Bob Kravitz is now my Jewish chaplain," signed chief of police. Instead, he sends me the pre-employment packet, which is about 40 pages long, asking for my full work history, my full background, permission to get fingerprints and to talk with every employer I've ever had, requirement to take a polygraph test, and then to sit in front of an oral board, which is a group of chaplains and police officers who look at interpersonal skills that chaplains may or may not have. I went through all that. It took about 8 or 9 months for all of it to be completed. And then I was sworn as a police chaplain for the city of Phoenix. Subsequently, he moved over to the DPS, to the Highway Patrol, and I picked up the badge there using the same background, basically, and a couple more years of experience, and likewise for the city of Scottsdale.
So I'll ask what all the rabbis always ask. So do you carry a weapon? You know, how does this work?
In the state of Arizona, the law enforcement chaplains are prohibited from carrying any kind of a weapon, including a knife, unless it's used as a tool.
So like fingernail clippers might be okay, but...
those would be fine, but to carry a switchblade, a stiletto, or a Glock would not be.
Right. How do you go out on calls? I mean, do you do some ride-arounds? Do you get called specifically to emergency situations?
Yes and yes. In the case of the chaplaincy for DPS, Arizona Department of Public Safety, we're required to put in a minimum of 8 hours a month. And that might be ride-alongs, that might be visiting the various offices, it might be counseling, participating in civic events or memorials. There are a variety of different ways. In other departments, they have different requirements. I carry a pager and two cell phones so that folks can reach me 24/7, and it is a responsibility to be available. And there are sometimes, obviously, that all of us are not available for something. But if a page comes out for a critical incident, and they're looking for a chaplain, we receive it, and then it's our responsibility to call and let it be known whether we're available or not available and what the time requirement is that we have till we can reach the scene.
What's the most challenging experience you've had as a police chaplain?
Probably the most challenging, and it happens all too frequently, is the death notifications to families at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning for the highway patrol, where I know that a family member has just died, either locally or we've been called by another department, and we have to go to the door and physically tell a family that the family member that they expected to come home would no longer come home.
Now, there are, you know, all kinds of rules for how this is done. Does a chaplain always go with the police officer to do the notification?
In most departments, it's written into the operations orders. Sometimes it just doesn't work that way because of availability or distance or time or whatever it is. But the Department of Public Safety is very good at trying, at least, to have two officers and one chaplain do any death notification, next of kin notification.
I saw recently where you had conducted a funeral for a Jewish police officer killed in the line of duty. This can't happen very often because I know very few Jewish mothers who tell their boys, you know, I really want you to grow up to be a police officer.
Well, in point of fact, it's a wonderful line of work to go into. And for those who want to help people in a very personal and a very important way, it's significant work. I did, unfortunately, have to conduct the funeral of a Gilbert police officer
right. Who
was killed in the line of duty, Eric Schuhhandler. And to the best of our knowledge and checking with the Arizona Jewish Historical Society likewise, he is the first Jewish police officer to die in the line of duty in the state of Arizona.
My goodness. The Jewish holidays wouldn't necessarily something that the police departments or state highway patrols would be very aware of. Is that an educational process for them as well?
Absolutely, it's an educational process. They want to know why I'm not available on Rosh Hashanah morning. Well, it's because I'm in synagogue. and there are other times during the year likewise. Some folks in the community question my availability on Shabbat. I can tell you that the Talmud is very specific. It says, Bikuach nefesh doche Shabbat. That the saving of a life or the assistance to someone who needs assistance on Shabbat overrides the strictures of the Sabbath day. And so even Orthodox police chaplains do respond on Shabbat and on Yom Tov when they're called.
You know, you had extensive work for an international human rights organization. A lot of times human rights organizations and police are seen as nearly antithetical entities. Do you view them that way?
I don't, because what's required is a better understanding of the parameters of each organization or department's responsibilities. I worked in building coalitions, Hispanic Jewish, Black Jewish, Asian, even a relationship with law enforcement in the Jewish community, which hadn't existed in Phoenix metro area in any very strong way for a long time. The law enforcement departments have a mission, have a responsibility, and they fulfill that. And if I can help them, and I have drawn on all my contacts in all my communities to help each one of the departments and vice versa in the organizations, because it's often that we have training or we have expertise that they could use, and we try to make that available and vice versa.
Bob, for all the work that you do in this chaplaincy and all the training, exactly how much money do you make out of this deal?
All three chaplaincies with City of Phoenix, City of Scottsdale, and Department of Public Safety are volunteer. There is no salary at all.
I think there's a formal title for that, Bubkis.
I get twice Bubkis.
Twice Bubkis.
I do receive uniforms from the department.
Oh, very nice.
I'm asked to wear. And, of course, that's a cost to the department.
Right.
And when available. There is sometimes funding to attend conferences and training programs.
It's an incredible service that you provide. Do you have any idea around the country how many Jewish police chaplains there are? Is there an association?
To my best of my knowledge, there's no Association of Jewish Police Chaplains. There are corrections chaplains.
Well, we finally found a Jewish organization that doesn't yet exist.
That may be, or I may just not have contacted it yet.
That's right.
There are Jewish chaplains all over the country.
Sure.
Reform, Orthodox, Conservative, Reconstructionist. Rabbis are very active in police chaplaincy in some of the major communities and in some very small communities where they provide service.
Tell me, you do hospital chaplaincy as your primary position now, visiting something like 15 hospitals a week. Is there any crossover in the work that you do?
Yes, absolutely. The training that I've had, for instance, in critical incident stress management that I've received through the police department is often helpful at bedside of dying patients to know how to handle bereaved or grieving families in a terrible time is something I know how to identify, and I know how to help them through it, not just through the grieving process, but even physiological things that they don't think of. When we go into trauma stage, our body secretes internally 160 something or other chemicals. In order to get back to composure, we have to release those chemicals. And it's not just adrenaline. There are many, many others. Adrenaline is probably the most famous. So we need to make sure that we tell folks about hydrating themselves, continuing their exercise, eating, which is very difficult at times of bereavement. Likewise, on the other side, the compassion that I think I've developed, and I've been told that I'm a pretty good pastor in that sense, that I've developed with hospital chaplaincy, helps me with police officers and their families and their kids. When there's a problem there, I think I'm more sensitive to understanding what's going on, and the family dynamic sometimes is part of the problem.
So last question, you went to Syracuse University and you have an on-air background. Any desire to get back on the air?
I'm always willing to get back on the air, absolutely. I've written for television, I've produced television and radio. I had my own talk show here in Scottsdale for a while. I love being in front of a microphone, even though I'm stammering and stuttering as we're talking today. But I much appreciate the opportunity to share what experience I have and what knowledge I have with those who are willing to learn. Broadcasting is a fabulous opportunity, and the training that I received from the Newhouse School at Syracuse allowed me to be much better on the pulpit.
I want to thank Rabbi Dr. Robert Kravitz for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Thank you so much.
It's been a great morning. Take care.
You too. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Two Jewish.
Chardonnay Shabbat is here. Friday night services were never this fun before. It's a loaf of good bread, a jug of excellent wine, and you, and a delightful way to begin your weekend with Sabbath fun and friendship at Temple Emmanuel during our summer Chardonnay Shabbat evenings. Join us for Chardonnay Shabbat at Temple Emmanuel every Friday night this summer. We start with a wine, cheese, and fruit pre-owned egg Shabbat reception at 5 p.m., followed by a fun, musical one-hour Sabbath service at 5:45. Celebrate summer with Chardonnay Shabbat. There's no charge or obligation. Just a lovely way to begin the weekend at Temple Emmanuel. Temple Emmanuel is centrally located at 225 North Country Club Road, between Broadway and 5th. Call 520-327-4501 for more information. That's 327-4501. Or visit our website at templeemmanueltucson.org. And join us on Friday nights for Chardonnay Shabbat.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Rabbi and cantor Dave Kane, a Holocaust survivor who recently returned from a reunion in Germany at the camps where he was imprisoned during the Holocaust. Our playout this morning comes from Israeli singer Rami Kleinstein and his really happy song Shemesh, Sun. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
ילדה קטנה ראש העיר הולך יחף ברוח כמו ניצול ממתין לאונייה ילד רץ בתוך כביסה תלויה רוטף אחרי ילדה שהתגרתה שק לי פה אחרי ילדה שמבלבלת מאחורי סדין נושק שפה שהתייבשה שמש, כמה שמש חום חמסין ושמי התחלת חזקים שמש, כמה שמש צילומים צופים של אנשים שמחים
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.